uneven, juvenile, and a waste of an array of considerable talent, Driveway Dolls is a huge disappointment. Linda Marich of Hey You Guys, ouch. Scathing review of our feature review this week, which is Driveway Dolls, the new film from the Coen brother. That's right. It's not the Coen brothers. It's the Coen brother now because they've split up. Also reviews of Meg Ryan. What a comeback for her. What Happens Later came out in November. Wasn't much buzz around it. I got to tell you, though, I was shocked how much I enjoyed it. El Conde was nominated for Best Cinematography. It's available on Netflix. I finally saw that. Just dot my I's, crossing my T's when it comes to the Oscars. To Kill a Tiger is also available on Netflix. That film was nominated for Best Documentary. And our old movie, one of my favorites, it's called Lone Star. Thanks to my buddy LeBoy who lent me his Criterion Edition, which he just got. And our wild card is a director, Alexander Philippe. There's a new documentary. If you love William Shatner, you're going to love this. It's You Can Call Me Bill. A William Shatner first-person documentary opens, in matter of fact, on his 93rd birthday, which is this Friday. I watched the documentary, had a fun time talking to Alexander. It's A-L-E-X-A-N-D-R-E. So not E-R. So it's not Alexander. So beforehand, I'm like, oh, it's Alexander. You can just say Alexander. I'm like, okay. But I did know an accent. Now, the last name, P-H-I-L-I-P-P-E. So it's not Philip. It's Philippe. He said, that's right. It's Philippe. I'm like, so you're kind of going halfway. Like, you want me to go all the way French? That would be Alexander Philippe. Would you want to go Alexander, anglicize it, but you still want the Philippe? I'm like, all right, no problem. Half English, half French. Sounds almost like a Larry David tone. The reason why is I know Christie's sister's awesome. Twin, great. My sister-in-law is awesome, dude. I was in Florida for a week. I was worried with the boys, how much work it's going to be. She surprises all of us, comes up for the week, looked after the kids, was awesome. Most importantly, has an HBO account. I'm like, yes. So I'm back in. I've been binge watching Curb Your Enthusiasm. We're going to do that later on. I just want to know, have you been watching the latest season of Curb, Cody?
I'm like four episodes in. Not okay. Fully caught up, but watching.
Yes. But we're on the same page because I'm actually in episode 5 right now. I believe there's been 7 so far. We'll do a proper
so
review.
So good.
Yeah, we'll do a proper review when you and I are up to date, but I just got to say two things. Leon, I love, and Vince Vaughn, I love. Two guys.
Dude,
it's fantastic.
It's, like I said, we'll save it. We'll save it for... I don't know how he's doing it, because the last couple seasons, to me, had fallen off a little bit,
yes.
But they're back. They're back, baby.
Yeah, first couple episodes were a little like, eh, but I'm like, the last couple have been great. I mean, it's and you're right. I think in general, 12 seasons, like, dude. You're not going to have your best after 12. Look at an athlete. You're not going to reach your best for 12 seasons. But the fact he's still cranking, it's pretty impressive. All right. I had a couple of stories for you. First, I wanted to recap my Florida trip with you. As a native Floridian, you can appreciate the terrain. So I flew Jersey to Fort Myers, Red Sox and Twins, up to Port Charlotte, knock out the Rays, then up to Clearwater, Phillies camp. From there, the guy's like, dude, Jays, they're right there. I'm like, really? Like, oh, Dunedin's like 15 minutes away. I'm like, great. Knock that out. Fantastic. Visited my cousin, lives just outside Tampa, Wawama, Florida. Great. Good times all around. As I'm checking out to drive Friday, I text Levitard on the Wednesday. I was like, hey, man, would love to get a little FaceTime if I could. Like, obviously, the Sunday Oscars thing, but would like to see. I haven't seen him since his brother passed away. I haven't seen him since Moss, which was December of whatever the hell it was, 2022. It's been 15 months. So he texted back, because, yes, I would like to see you. Saturday, me and Valerie got a thing, but just, like, can you be flexible? Maybe Friday, maybe Saturday. I'm like, whatever you want, man. All good. So Friday, I leave. As I'm leaving Clearwater, I got to switch cars now. So MLB gave me a rental car. I go back to the Tampa airport. I take that car. Metalark has a car for me. So I'm switching my cars. As I switch my cars, I go, oh my God, my tuxedo. But after my tux, I'm like, where did I put the tuxedo? I'm like, oh, it's in the Fort Myers Hotel. It has to be. I remember taking my stuff. I'm like, why would I take the tuxedo out of the car? I'm like, whatever. I was just taking all my stuff out of the car. I wasn't thinking. I call the Fort Myers Hotel. Did you have it? Was there a tuxedo left there? They're like, yes, there is. I'm like, fantastic. I'm driving to Miami. I'm going to stop in Fort Myers. I'll pick it up. As I'm driving, beautiful drive. I don't know if you've ever driven Tampa to Florida. 4-hour drive-ish. But, man, your weather, I mean, it's funny. Ironically, you were recently praising New York weather, how cold it is. You like the chill. I'm going the other way, going, oh, my God, 80 and sunny. This is amazing. Top down, I'm fine along this. It's 275. Beautiful water everywhere. Levitard text ETA. I text back. I think the car play in the car. I didn't even text and drive. Car play. I'm like, yep. I should be there around 8-ish or 9. Like, I'll let you know. He calls immediately. Because you poor, poor sap. I'm like, what? He goes, you non-native Floridian. I'm like, what? He goes, you're just driving around spring training. I'm like, yeah, it's been awesome. Fort Myers, Port Charlotte, Clearwater, knocked out Dunedin. I saw the Jays, Yankees. This is amazing. Buddy, switch cars. I have to make a quick stop in Fort Myers. Long story. But then I'll see you tonight. Like, whatever. He's like, me and Valerie going for a drink. I'm like, buddy, I'll meet you. That's fair, because you don't even know what you're getting into. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, it's spring break. It's the disaster. You're not going to make it. I go, ah. I'm going to be fine. It's 2 hours to Fort Myers. Fort Myers made 2 hours ago, 8:30. He goes, okay. All right. He's like, I'm going to be out till about 10. I don't think you're going to make it till 11. But if you get close, you holler at me. I'm like, you got it. I just want to come see it. Yeah, have a hug. And that's it. He's like, you got it. Pick up the tuxedo in Fort Myers. All good. I don't know how much that cost me. I think it was okay. I mean, Tampa to Miami, I'm sure there's a better way, but I stopped at Fort Myers. Not a big deal. Keep on driving. Cody, I got, and then Dan told me specifically where he was. It was like 8:30. I knew where I was from the Elser. I was 15 minutes away. I'm like, great. I'm like, freaking laboratory. I don't know what he's talking about. I'm going to drop at the Elser 8:45, drop my stuff off, bam. And then I was like, actually, why do I even need to go to the Elser? Like, I don't need to check in. I'll go right to where he is. He told me where he is. He's on South Beach. I put in the address, buddy. You know that moment when you look and it's, you'll know that, I don't know, it's a bridge. I was stuck at a bridge.
Oh, no, like the causeway. Like the you causeway. Got onto the causeway before you realized the traffic to get onto the beach.
And that moment where you just see red on the line, it says 2.7 miles, exit 15, I think. And it says 42 minutes. And I go, that's not going to be 42 minutes. Like, this is just going to be 52 minutes, 82 minutes. Didn't move for 10 minutes. It was like the worst of like New York traffic. I'm like, I know Miami, they get after it, but I'm like, I have never.
On and off the bridge. Beach specifically is the worst in all of Miami. Like when there's something going on South Beach and you're trying to get there. Yeah. Oh man, it's the worst.
So I text Dan. I'm like, hey man, I'll never doubt you again. I don't even know what this is going to take. He's like, we'll reschedule tomorrow. All good. Just I'll holler at you in the morning. I'm like, thanks. It got so bad, even as it's like updating, eventually it said, like, no option. I've never seen that before. On Google Maps, it's like, no, like road closure. Like the exit they were telling me, that exit's closed. So you can't even get to South Beach from where you are now. I'm like, I don't even know what I'm doing here. So eventually I peel off, went to the Elser, all good. Saturday, I saw Dan for lunch, had a great time. I saw Ben Lyons Saturday night for dinner. It was great. And you were at the Panthers game. Would have liked to see you be Panthers, all good. Mm-hmm. And suddenly we do the show. It's fine. I had a wonderful time. And as I said to you off air, I want to come down more often. So hopefully we can find some opportunities, but I can fill in here and there, come down to you guys, because it really is an impressive event. On a personal note, today is 5 years for me at MLB Network. And it's been a wonderful ride for me. And the people there are awesome. Specifically, I have to shout out LaBoy, Spinelli, Folger, Mitch, Marty, Collins, the guys who listen to the podcast. They're my favorites. But one of the funnier moments when I was at MetalArk, the first time I walked in, you weren't there yet. 2 o'clock call time, I walk in, starving. And I can't remember who the guy was, but I was like, is there any bottled water anywhere? He's like, no. I'm like, you know, no water? He's like, no, there's this. And he points. And later on, when you were there, like, hey, Bet MLB Network doesn't have that. Can you please describe what exactly your drink machine is?
It's the most high-tech water machine. I think it's just a water machine. I mean, I think whether you want it sparkled, half sparkled, like there's levels to the sparkleness. You can have it just regular water. Flavors. It's kind of like one of these... modern day soda machines where it's like you have a screen there and it's like, would you like lime and orange water with a little bit of sparkle? Would you like 70% sparkle with some mango and some pineapple? It's like, it is just, and I'm just, give me the no sparkle, yes. No flavor, just give me water. But it is an impressive looking machine.
How much did that thing cost? Like I was riveted by it. I'm like, how much? This machine is incredible. Like, who was the guy when they're defending? You know, we gotta get this water machine. Like, I'm not sure what the budget for these things, but water machine is a must. But you're right. I love watermelon. I'll take the watermelon water. But it was very fascinating.
At our old studio, we would crush water bottles, which in 2024 is not.
Right. Everyone gets mad
like
about
the
that.
Best thing to do for the environment. So correct. I think the decision was just made at the old studio. We used to waste a lot of plastic.
Yeah.
And this machine tells you at the bottom right corner how many plastic bottles we've saved using it. It's like one of those things. It's like you've saved 20,000 plastic bottles in the amount of water you guys have used with this thing.
Amazing. As I told you last week, I'm very impressed by the operation, but I neglected to mention the water machine. And you specifically said to me, I bet you MLB Network doesn't have one of these. And you're right. 5 years there. I love my job. But you guys have the better water machine. Even better, your fridge. I've never seen this before. Any job I've ever had. ESPN, TSN, The Score, Omni, all the WWE, all the places I've worked. Actually, WWE was like this. You open up the fridge door and I go, and they go, have whatever you want. I go, really? They're like, protein shakes, protein bar, sticks of cheese, pieces of meat. I'm like, unlimited. I mean, you guys are definitely doing the snacks right. Like, go at it, man. This is awesome.
I am looking now online to like, I'm like, let's see how much these things go for.
This water, before you say anything, I'm going to say $10,000.
I don't think it's that much.
Okay, $5,000.
This is the Bevy Smart Water Cooler. If you want to look it up, BEVI Smart Water Cooler.
BEVI.
I mean, I'm
going to tell my boss. I've been at MLB Network 5 years. I love this place. I have one recommendation. We need to get a Bevy machine. We can save plastic. The Levitard guys have figured this out. They're in Miami. They know what they're doing. We're doing this. That's my proposal.
I'm trying to find the price,
boss.
Man. It must be a lot because this price is.
I'm telling you, it's $10,000. I looked at. I was fascinated by it for 6.5 hours while you guys ate chicken tenders. I thought about the Oscars and I thought about that water machine. And I said, I gotta get one of these.
Wow,
watermelon, strawberry, kiwi.
It must be so expensive that you have to get a quote for it. They don't even tell you. Like it's. I have to like put in all my info to get a quote on this thing.
The
stand up 2.0 is the one we have. If people are researching this,
okay,
the
let's research this. Tweet
water
us,
dispenser stand up 2.0.
All right.
Anyway.
Bidding starts at 10K. The other story to tell you on a personal note, we're 1 week into Ramadan. So for those who are unaware, I have to fast. Sunrise to sunset, no food, no water, which is why, of course, I'm thinking about water because I'm so thirsty.
Amin al-Hassan doing the same thing.
Amin al-Hassan as well, which is ironic because I texted Amin Tuesday and I said sunrise was at 7:01. You have to fast an hour before sunrise. So it's like 5:45 to 7. So I text Amin. I go, MLB tonight, 7 till 8. Can you believe the fact sunset 7:01? I mean, text me back. He's, I'm at the, it was the Nuggets Heat game. And he said, pro tip. He goes, come on camera, start the show, and then toss to the analyst, ask for a full screen, boom, and then just go to town. Some water, some dates, just get after it. It's like, I go, no, I should start the show. You know, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back with more. Just a complete audible at everybody. I have to eat something. I've been fasting all day. But here's where things get a little bit awry. So I don't know how you're with Christmas lights. I don't know if Christy and you guys really get after it, but like, my wife Amy says to me, we have to make it feel festive for the kids. I'm like, all right. So she's got like Ramadan balloons and stuff. She's got like different sayings over the house. We got whatever you want. So outside, there's like, you know, a crescent moon, which is part of Islamic symbolism. And there's like a balloon. It just says Ramadan Mubarak. Yesterday, I'm upstairs and I hear my wife talking to somebody outside for like an extended conversation. Eventually, I go downstairs. One of my kids wants to play baseball. We're going to go to the back. And then my eldest son says to me, he's like, you should go see what's going on. I'm like, what is it? He goes, I think he knows you. I was like, what? He's like, who is it? He's like, oh, I think some guy who knows you. He's a fan of yours or something. Like, what are you talking about? So I go to the front. I go, how you doing? She goes, oh, and he says, oh my God. And he's like, very excited. I'm like, oh, how you doing? I was like, good, good. He's like, oh, I'm a huge fan. Because I've just been talking to your wife. She's so lovely. I'm like, yeah, I'm aware. What's going on? And he's like, I'm a huge fan. And, you know, I'm Muslim as well. And I was driving by and I saw Ramadan Mubarak and I knew you lived in the, I'm not going to say the city ever again. And I knew you lived here. So I thought I would just, you know, come say salam and just want to see what's up. And I'm like, okay. And thank you. You're having the reaction that I hope most people have listening. I played off. I go, oh, that's great, man. Well, nice meeting you. He's like, and he has a Jays hat because I'm a huge Blue Jays fan. Like, cha-cha-cha-cha means uncle. He goes, my uncle is from Toronto. I'm from Kuwait originally. Tell me his whole life story. He's like, yeah, so we're in Toronto. And I'm just a huge fan. And I just want to say salam. I'm like, hey, all good, man. Thank you for me. He's like, my friends are huge fans. I go, tell your friends I said thank you. You know, tell them rock on. I'm going to go play baseball, my son, but all good. And then he's like, also, my wife is starting a gym. I'm like, uh-huh. And he's like, so, you know, it's like this really kind of high-end place. It's called P-Volve. I'm like, uh-huh. And Eamon says to me something like, it's like Jennifer Aniston's gym or something. I'm like, okay, sure, whatever. I'm like, I have a gym where I pay $22 a month. I don't plan to be leaving Crunch Fitness anytime soon. But he's like, yeah, it's really great. It's high-end. You know, it's awesome. He's like, all right. I'm like, I will never go to the, like, there's no chance I'm going to the gym. A couple more minutes, right? Nice meeting you. Afterwards, I'm like thinking about it in my head. I'm like, you know, you're semi-famous. Like when Dan and I went up for lunch, guy walked by, goes, Dan Le Batard. He's like, yeah. He's like, all right. He's like, he tells his kid, this guy went to the U. The guy, kid does the U. Dan's like, oh, yeah, U. Awesome. I'm like, this must happen to Dan all the time. But like, that's fine. Dan was fine with it. Imagine someone knocking on Dan's door and going, are you? And by the way, talking to Valerie, is this the home of Dan Le Batard? Yeah. I'm a huge fan. I just want to let you know what a fan I'm like. No, we're not doing that.
It's terrible. Like, that's honestly the only place where I would freak out. Like, any other place in my life, I'm going to be totally cool and
you
excited.
You get recognized. People see you. Chris Cody, what's up, man? How you doing, buddy? Where are you? If somebody came to your house, they're talking
I'm
to your
freaking
wife.
Out. I'm freaking out.
This guy knows where I live.
That's honestly one of my biggest fears is like being around my neighborhood and being and getting recognized for the show. Like, I this is my area. Like, yeah. I anywhere else. Yeah, dude, and your wife's out there talking to him.
Very unnerving. Because I knew it couldn't have been a great, because my wife didn't have the door all the way open. Like, she's having that conversation. Very famously, Michael Kay, great line on Jeter. He goes, Jeter's the kind of guy, even if a reporter he knew for 10 years, if you went to his door, he'd talk to you, but he wouldn't open the screen door. It's one of those, the door's open. Like, I'm not letting you in. Like, that's kind of like Jeter. And like, that's my wife. She had the door open. Like, they're talking. I'm like, you're not coming in my house. I'm like, what?
Man.
Guy knows where I live, Cody.
Dude.
Ramadan Mubarak. That's
I mean, it's a good lesson for that guy, because even if the guy's listening to this right now, he's probably like, he's probably like, I had no idea that I was doing something. And maybe people just don't know, but it's like, dude, you don't want people at your house. Like, it's where I live. It's where I rest.
I said to my wife, everyone knows how much I love Scorsese. I know he has a 5-story townhouse somewhere on the Upper East or Upper West Side, because there's an article in New York Times. If you said to me, when you were visiting, go, hey, let's go to his house. I know the exact address. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. I'm like, even if I was loitering the area, I'm like, let's just wait until he goes to get a sandwich or walks his dog.
Of course.
Bumping. I'm not going to knock on the door and go, excuse me, is this Martin Scorsese's house? I just want to let you know what a huge fan. I'm like, security, immediately.
I guess I am talking out of both sides of my mouth, because I do love a good star tour. Like in LA, like I'll pay $40 to ride around. Okay, and we go love see Costner's house.
If I said that's Will Ferrell's house, Cody, like, yeah, I'm like, we should go. Like, we're not going to knock on his door.
There's a difference between, I just want to know where he lives. I'm never going to go up there and talk to him. Like, that's like, if you want to go look at Marty's house, that's fine. Yeah. But like, there's no engaging. There's no engaging. Right. That's wild, man.
Very unnerving. I just had to tell you my story. That's all.
Thanks for the support, guy, though. Just don't come to my house.
I don't know if he's going to be listening, but I pictured you specifically. I was like, oh, Chris is moderately famous in Miami. People know who he is. Somebody might run down the street. I'm like, if somebody came to your house, you'd be like, hey, man, my kid's here. Like, you know.
Yeah. I'm like the perfect level of famous, though, where I only get recognized at like sporting events. Like,
yeah, Panthers game for sure.
Panthers game.
With Roy, maybe
games.
With Mike, Billy, yes. Whatever. Yeah, so you guys are gathered. That happened with the Danettes, the Dan Patrick Show. One time I saw the guy look like Seton, and then I saw those guys go, that's obviously the group. Like, they all travel together. Mm-hmm. Pauly and those guys are very funny. All right, let's do some movies now that we got that out of the way. First and foremost, Driveaway Dolls. I was in Fort Myers, had to go see a movie, only playing it at 5:30 showing. But I was like, all right, whatever are we going to do here? It's no longer the Coen Brothers, it's the Coen Brother. Now, you may not be aware, I was talking about this with Pete Fairbanks, the Rays reliever of all people, because I said to him when I met him, I go, my guy, I'm a whole huge movie guy. He's like, huh? Every time I see your name, you know what I'm thinking of? He's like, yeah, Douglas. Douglas Fairbanks is a silent film star, was in The Mask of Zorro, like classic from the 1920s and 30s. So I said, I'm going to ask you about it in the interview. He's like, sure. So I said to Pete, I'm like, hey, man, every time I see your name, I think Fairbanks. It's like meeting somebody named Chaplin. He's like, yep, Douglas Fairbanks. Any relation? He's like, no. I'm like, all right. Because I go, how often do you get this? He goes, not often. He goes, you're the first guy in a while that's like, Douglas Fairbanks, any relation? 1920s film star? I'm like, no. And then we start talking about movies. I said, I just saw Driveaway Dolls. He's like, oh, yeah. I go, it's the new Coen Brother movie. He goes, Coen Brothers? I go, no, Coen Brother. He's like, I go, they split. He's like, they did? I'm like, exactly. I don't know if people realize this. I go, Joel Coen did The Tragedy of Macbeth with Denzel a couple years ago. That got nominated for Best Cinematography, a bunch of other stuff. This is Ethan Coen, the other brother, who used to produce and co-write. This one he wrote and directed. He's like, oh, no kidding. I'm like, exactly. What's it about? I go, it's a lesbian road comedy. He's like, well, there you go. I'm like, exactly. So the synopsis of Driveaway Dolls, which originally Ethan Coen wanted to tell Driveaway Dykes, and the studio said no. First off, him and his wife co-wrote it. Him and his wife, look this up if you want, Trisha Cook. Rags, by the way, I believe when Rags had his store, RIP, Rags, Ethan Coen came to his store with Trisha Cook. He's like, oh my God, it's Ethan Coen. Like, he's freaking out. And he's like, yeah, that's my wife, blah, blah, blah. So Trisha Cook, out and out lesbian, but married Ethan Coen. So I don't know how this works. I don't know if they were married and then she came to terms with her sexuality. I'm not sure if she was always a lesbian. He was aware of this. I'm not sure if she's bi, but all I know is this. He's married to a lesbian. And she said, we need to make a movie about lesbians. He's like, I'm in. Once I get rid of Joel here, I got my own. We're going to do this. So the story is this. Jamie regrets her breakup with her girlfriend while Marion needs to relax. In search of a fresh start, they embark on an unexpected road trip to Tallahassee. Things quickly go awry when they cross paths a group of inept criminals. I'll say this right now. Coen Brothers, better than Coen Brother. There's something to be said for strength in numbers, and we could have used Joel as well. Now, there's some moments in this that are actually funny. I appreciate that this guy and Trisha, his wife, want to tell a different story. It's definitely in your face. The first couple of scenes, like, wow, I was not expecting this type of perfect. He couldn't get Driveway Dykes in the title, but he could get a lot of full frontal in the title. I'm like, okay. And it's got one of the actresses we love because she was in Blockers, Geraldine Viswanathan. She plays Marion. She was great in that John Cena comedy, which is also quite raunchy. Margaret Qualley plays the other girl, who's a very forward-thinking lesbian. Go ahead.
I just have an update. I did a little research here. She and Ethan quickly hit it off, but there was one problem. He asked me out on a date, and I told him I was lesbian. For a time, they remained good friends. We would hang out. We did a lot of reading together. And then years later, I was like, this is silly. I kind of love this man. So they married and had 2 children.
Unbelievable. So she's...
It's been open though the whole time.
Power to the man, whatever makes you happy. So anyways, Margaret and Geraldine, 2 girls in the run. They unfortunately come across something that belongs to some criminals And Bill Camp, who's always great. I love Bill Camp. He was in The Night Of course, with Riz Ahmed, John Turturro. He plays Curly, who's this guy at a mechanic store who unfortunately gets roughed up by the criminals. Now, they got some star power here. The main criminal, Colman Domingo. You just saw him at the Academy Awards. He was nominated for the first time ever, Best Actor, up for Rustin. And he plays one of the main mob bosses. Then you get a couple of, you know, goons together, played by C.J. Wilson, not the pitcher, and Joey Slotnick. Beanie Feldstein, Jonah Hill's sister, she also shows up playing Suki. She hates Jamie, who's Margaret Qualley, so she's rather amusing. And the biggest shocking cameo, which I think it's in the trailer, so it's okay, I didn't want to give it away, is Matt Damon. I was stunned that Matt Damon is the movie playing Senator Gary Channel. Matt Damon. Bottom line is this, we needed Joel as well, okay? It's like the shipping container with just Billy. Like, you need the whole crew here. So it felt like a Coen Brothers movie, but missing the essence of the Coen Brothers. Like, it's kind of like Raising Arizona, right? Nick Cage on the run. It's got a feel of Fargo to it because you got two criminals together, Steve Buscemi and his buddy there, but rather warmed over Coen Brother. Not quite the same. It is a good cast. Matt Damon is very funny. Small role. He's only in maybe 5 minutes. A little bit of star power there, but it wasn't great. What I appreciate, though, is you rarely see comedies in theaters anymore, so I was glad to at least go see a comedy, have some laughs. It's quick, maybe 85-minute movie, but ultimately, this is not a film that I could recommend. I'm giving it two Maple Leafs. I hope the Coen brothers get back together. Next up, and this is, I got to tell you, all the times I've been doing Cinephile, what, 320 episodes? This might be one of the biggest surprises I've ever had in my life. I'm not exaggerating right now. What Happens Later is on paper a Chris Cody movie and not an Adnan Menderes movie. It's a rom-com starring Meg Ryan. I said I have no interest in this movie. The synopsis is this. Willa and Bill are ex-lovers that will see each other for the first time in years when they both find themselves snowed in transit at an airport overnight. This was on the flight down to Fort Myers. And I watched the trailer. I said, great trailer. It's got a great music to it. It's well cut, kind of fun, kind of zippy. I go, you know what? Hour 40 in a plane? Who says no? And I was pleasantly surprised. Before I started watching, I said, let me just quickly check the reviews because I know it came out in November and I don't think anyone really saw it. So it had maybe, I don't know, 40% Rotten Tomatoes from the critics, maybe 28% from audiences. And lo and behold, maybe I was just in a good mood in the airplane, but I thought it was an excellent film. Now, part of it is, I mentioned rom-com. Meg Ryan made her name, of course, of rom-coms, When Harry Met Sally, Sleepless in Seattle, etc. It's not truly a rom-com. I would call it more of a romantic drama. It's not as much comedy as expected. But basically, her and Duchovny are ex-lovers. They find each other in an airport. They're both stranded trying to get in their plane. But it's a little bit hyper-realistic. I'll explain. I've never been to an airport where there was a delay and there was nobody else there. So it's very odd that within the airport hangar, it's literally just the two of them. Like, you're like, there's like a couple people roaming. And I'm like, wow, this is an awfully desolate airport. I don't know where the hell they are, but he's trying to get to New York City. They're trying to get to Denver. I'm like, I've never seen an airport this quiet. But the story is meant to be just focused on them. It was based in a play. And that's one of the challenges with the movie is I find generally rom-coms, you can name anyone you want. There's generally always one scene-stealing great supporting character. So if you said Father of the Bride, it's Martin Short. He's awesome in that movie. Obviously, Steve Martin's the lead, his girl, et cetera. But I'm like, oh, Martin Short or Frank, he's so funny. If you said any number of, you know, The Hangover, et cetera, those guys are all kind of supporting actors together. But Galifianakis is great, et cetera. So with What Happens Later, it's literally just a two-hander. It's just Meg Ryan, David Duchovny. I thought at times they could have used a supporting character. But I really enjoyed this movie. And here's what I enjoyed about it is it's a really mature look at romance and how things change over time. And I can't remember the last time I saw any sort of romantic movie featuring two people in their 60s. Now, Duchovny, of course, I love. Larry Sanders alumni, good friend of Gary Shandling, who's played basketball at the time. Everything Duchovny does, he's always great. And he's a world-weary dad. He's through a divorce. He's trying to get back to see his daughter. Had a bad fight with his daughter. The movie reveals what that was about. And that gets us to Meg Ryan, who doesn't do much acting anymore. Hasn't acted in a few years. A quick Google search, which I would like to do now, Chris. If you look up Meg Ryan, the first thing that comes up is Meg Ryan facelift. Apparently, there's a New York Post article, which I did get sucked into reading afterwards, saying that they believe that she got a facelift, but it was a bad facelift. The face is supposed to be stretched, I believe, if I'm saying this right, horizontally, but her face was stretched vertically. So if you look right now at a picture of Meg Ryan, you're like, oh, like she looks like Meg Ryan, but she looks a little bit different. It's not to say that it's off-putting, but it was a little noticeable while I was watching. Like, oh, she looks just a little bit different. Not sure exactly what's going on here. Having said that, is she still a capable screen presence? Of course she is. She's still warm. She's still delightful. She's still funny. She's just no longer perky and cute and feigning orgasms in, you know, Katz's Deli. But ultimately, I thought it was a terrific script, and she directed it as well. So clearly, Meg was passionate about it. She co-wrote the script. And every romantic movie needs at least one great dance sequence. There's a fabulous dance sequence. Now, the song is by Pure. I'll double-check the name of it. It's that great song. It came out like late 80s, I want to say. But Her and Duchovny do this great little dance sequence. And I said, you know what? Every great romantic movie needs Lightning Seeds is the band. Pure is the song. And it's just a fabulous song, man. It's just a great jam. Came up back in 89. And it's a lovely dance sequence. And it was really romantic and well staged. And even the way she shoots it, you know, she's got snow falling down outside, gives it really kind of a beautiful kind of sheen to it. So I was impressed with her ability as a director, because it's basically one setting in the airport hangar. How can you make this captivating, two people talking for 90 minutes? And while it could have used a supporting character with some spice, and maybe it did lag a little bit, overall, I thought it was impactful. I thought it was moving. I thought it was genuine. The ending, I will not give away, but I thought it was sincere. And it was really nice at the end. Her credit just says to Nora. Of course, Nora Ephron, the late great writer, director. She was the one who did so many of those romantic comedies like Sleepless in Seattle, worked with her and worked with Tom Hanks so much, passed away a few years back. So I thought it was a nice tribute. I got to be honest. Critics didn't like it. Fans didn't like it. I found one critic. I looked up Mick LaSalle, who's a longtime film critic in San Francisco. He gave it 4 Maple Leafs. He loved it. Everybody else kind of crapped on it. I'm giving it 3.5. I really enjoyed it. Let's fire through a couple more that I really want to get to Lone Star and our special guest. El Conde. You like vampires, Cody?
No.
If you're not big into vampires, it's not the one for you. We can do this in a minute. The synopsis is, after living 250 years in this world, Augusto Pinochet, who is not dead but an aged vampire, decides to die once and for all. It's directed by Pablo Larraín. You may recognize his name. He did Spencer, which Ben Lyons loved. Ben called that the best movie of the year. It came out a couple years ago. Kristen Stewart played Lady Di. I thought it was all right. I was shocked how much Ben loved it. I remember he came out of the screening and was like, bro, best movie of the year. I'm like, really? And I saw it, I'm like, a little boring. I've seen better Lady Di documentaries, but regardless, Lorraine's done some things. He also did Jackie with Natalie Portman. Didn't care for that movie either. Thought that was incredibly boring. But this time he's kind of relying on his native soil as he's taking a historical figure from Chile and putting it towards comical means. Again, if you like a good vampire movie, plenty of bites, plenty of sucking blood, plenty of odd double entendres and jokes. The reason I saw it was one reason. It was nominated for Best Cinematography at the Oscars, and it's on Netflix. Let me tell you something. Cinematography was outstanding. One thing about the cinematography branch of the Oscars, they love a good black and white movie. They like to nominate a black and white movie, just as they did with The Tragedy of Macbeth, Joel Coen's movie a couple years ago. So the movie won't win, but it'll get nominated. So I remember when the nominations came out, you and I did this. We went through all the movies. I said, wow, I've seen all the Best Picture nominees. I've seen all the acting nominees. What's this El Conde? So now I know. Black and white movie from Chile on Netflix. Beautifully shot. If you like vampires, check it out. I'm giving it 2.5 Maple Leafs. A couple of blurbs here for you from El Conde. Carlos Aguilar, a wickedly funny, blood-soaked portrait of a decaying tyrant. He is a tyrant. Anthony Lane of New Yorker. Few jokes, no matter how sick and strong, can be told over and over without beginning to fade. A little bit goes a long way. And Noah Berlasca, Chicago Reader. The satire of Pinochet is gloriously unsubtle. Again, if you like a good political satire, you'll appreciate some of the jokes that Lorraine is going for in El Conde. Available on Netflix, came out last August. To Kill a Tiger. Man, this is a tough movie. Available also on Netflix. I saw it because it's nominated for Best Documentary Feature. Ranjit, a farmer in India, takes on the fight of his life when he demands justice for his 13-year-old daughter, the victim of brutal gang rape. His decision to support his daughter is virtually unheard of, and his journey is unprecedented. Nisha Pahuja is the writer and the director. This is a dark story and obviously very powerful because, you know, in this type of atmosphere, in India, rural India, for this guy to say, my daughter's 13 years old and she was raped and we're going to the police, he's not going to get the support that he should, that he would get in other countries. And so, as I said, his decision to support his daughter, unheard of. And the police is like, you know, hey, whatever happened, happened. One of his friends in the neighborhood is saying, these are good kids. I'm not saying what they did was right. They got carried away. Let's just move on. Like it's actually very disturbing how little support he's getting. But the fact that this father soldiers on, and of course that the daughter has the wherewithal and the strength to say, no, these guys should be prosecuted, what they did to me. I mean, it's just, it's very, very tough to watch, but it was really well done. I'll give To Kill a Tiger 3 Maple Leafs. Again, I wouldn't say I enjoyed the movie because the subject matter is so dark, but there is hope, there is optimism, and it certainly is a notable movie for any woman who's a victim of sexual assault to be able to see that, yes, coming forward will hopefully prosecute those who are responsible. Hopefully other survivors will come forward, and hopefully, most importantly, that justice is carried out and people can go on with their lives. But I'm sure this situation happens a lot in India, happens in third world countries. The rape of a 13-year-old, it's about as tough as you can imagine. It's not for the faint of heart. There's thankfully no recreation of it, but just imagining what this daughter's going through, her bravery, it's amazing. And again, the father and the mother as well, they're all really taking chances here, and they're rewarded. at least in their own way. Peter Rayner of Film Week, it's a powerful movie. Mark Jenkins, Washington Post, what's extraordinary about To Kill a Tiger is Kieran and Ranjit's determination and the possible changes for good that may result from it. Exactly. There is a note of optimism. And Peter Sobachinsky of RogerEbert.com, To Kill a Tiger tells an important story in a compelling manner that makes it worth watching, but its journey is so intense at times, it might prove to be too much for some. I will send a lighter note. I didn't realize Netflix has dubbing available. So while I was watching the movie, I was like, these people clearly don't speak English here in India. They speak Hindi. So I checked like 10 minutes in, because it was like a bad, like Bruce Lee movie. Like, you know, the guy's talking and his lips aren't moving. Exactly. Yeah. So then I pause and I go, oh, I'm watching it. I didn't know Netflix offers this for a lot of foreign films, English dubbing. But I was like, you know what? What the hell? So I powered through the English dubbing. And for some reason, you're not a subtitles fan. I hate, as you know, captions. I go nuts on that. My wife is pro caption. My brother's pro captions. I hate captions. Hate it. So I'm pro subtitle because I like to support foreign films, but I don't like captions. But I was like, given the option, I'll just go dubbing. So that's the first movie I've watched in a while, all dubbing. And then I doubled down. Al Condi is also in Spanish. But you know what? Dubbing's available on Netflix. I'm dubbing again. I'm pro dubbing when it comes to these films. If it gets people watching foreign films, I'm in. I'll give To Kill a Tiger 3 Minute Beliefs. One review of Lone Star, and then we're going to get to our special guest, Alexandre Philippe. You can call me Bill. Lone Star is a hell of a movie, man. My boy, John LaBoy, who loves Criterion films as much as I do, texted me some movies he just bought. I go, please give me Lone Star. He's like, yes, I'm in. I watched it the other day. That's just an incredible movie. And really a time capsule of when indie movies were so great in the 90s. Here's the story. When the skeleton of his murdered predecessor is found, Sheriff Sam Deeds unearths many other long-buried secrets in this Texas border town. It's written and directed by John Sayles. Cody and I would know that name for one reason as baseball fans. He wrote and directed 8 Men Out, which is one of my favorite baseball movies, all about the Black Sox scandal. Great cast, John Cusack, David Strathairn, Charlie Sheen. Awesome movie. John Mahoney, he plays the manager, Kid Gleason. So Sayles is one of these directors that he's been working for a while. Now he basically is a novelist because indie movies have dried up. But he had a great run there in the 80s and 90s, and he was a brilliant writer. He would make these indie movies for scratch, but the scripts are so good. The scripts are so good, the movie was nominated for Best Screenplay. Didn't win. It was the only nomination Lone Star got. Lone Star should have got a lot more nominations. It was a great year for movies, same year as Fargo, 1996. But I want to read you some quotes. This is how good Sayles' writing is. Cliff says, I never thought I'd see a buddy of mine would be dating a woman with 3 bars on her shoulder. Mickey, I think it's beyond what you'd call dating. Cliff, you're going to get married? Mickey, maybe. Cliff, you met her family? Think her family's going to be okay? You're a white guy? Mickey, they think any woman over 30 who isn't married is a lesbian. She figures they'll be so relieved that I'm a man. Cliff, yeah, it's always heartwarming to see a prejudice defeated by a deeper prejudice. Wesley later on, this stretch of road runs between nowhere and not much else. Sheriff Sam Deeds, I'm working on a few things. I'm going over to the other side. Ray, Republicans? Sheriff, no, Mexico. Mikey, let's see. I did 2 tours of duty in Southeast Asia. I was married for 5 years. I couldn't tell you which experience was worse. I knew she was Japanese going in, but she didn't tell me about the ninja assassin part. I mean, Sayles is writing, just flies off the page. This is a great one here. This is this Cody, not Chris Cody, C-O-D-Y. To run a successful civilization, you have to have your lines of demarcation between right and wrong, between this and that. Your daddy understood that. He was what you call it, the referee of this damn menudo we got down here. He understood how most folks don't want their salt and sugar in the same jar. Sheriff, boy, you mix drinks as bad as you mix metaphors, you'd be out of a job. Bartender, I'm as liberal as the next guy. Sheriff, if the next guy is a redneck. Later on, there's jokes about the Alamo and just how they're differently seen between Mexicans and non-Mexicans. Sheriff Sam Deeds, you gotta put up a banner. Frontera, Texas, gateway to inexpensive pussy. Ray, this ain't Houston, my friend. We're pretty much running things now. Our good day has come. Shadow, you chumps haven't had a good day since the Alamo. Line after line. I mean, you watch a John Sayles movie and you go, man, this guy can write, and it's so memorable and it's so impactful. The best description I could call his movies is that they're literary. Again, 8 Men Out feels like a book. It was adapted by a book, but in Sayles' hands, it feels so authentic and so genuine. Similarly, as a writer in Lone Star, you feel like you're actually there in Texas. You can feel the tension between whites and blacks and mainly Mexicans. You can feel the tension of the past. It makes me think of that great line from the movie Magnolia, one of my favorites, Paul Thomas Anderson, when Jason Robards says, the past may be through with you, but the past ain't through with us. And that's what this movie's about, how the past can impact you. Now, there's lots of flashbacks. This film is known for its excellent use of live segues in which scenes change within a single camera shot, in this case, shifting back and forth at the same time location. He does it expertly. I'm surprised more movies don't do that when it comes to flashbacks. Sales has never done that better. No movie's done it better, I would argue. It was number 4 Roger Ebert's list, best films of 1996. It was number 5 on Gene Siskel's list of the best films of 1996. It was chosen by Time Magazine, one of the best films of 1996, at position number 4. It's included among the 101 movies you must see before you die, edited by Steven Schneider. And here's one impact here about the fact how broke they were. According to John Sayles, the broken drive-in screen at the end of the film had to be built as none existed in the area, costing $50,000. The last shot of the movie, it's the two leads in front of a broke-down drive-in screen for $50,000, a substantial sum considering the film's independent, low-budget nature and the props used in only one scene. As it was also the last scene to be shot before wrapping the production, the crew screened the last dailies in that very same screen, adding a silver lining to the expense. And one little tidbit for you. The movie playing at the drive-in that young Sam and young Pilar attend is Black Mama, White Mama, an in-joke reference to Pilar's mixed parentage. The film was a low-budget blaxploitation movie made in the Philippines, released in 1973. Chris Cooper is the star. He won an Oscar for adaptation, that great Nicolas Cage movie. He's awesome in the film, as is the entire cast. Matthew McConaughey, small role as well. If I remember, I will text Cody, because years ago I interviewed Matthew McConaughey. On ESPN, I said, I got to talk to you about Lone Star. And he did answer it. So I'm going to find that clip. We'll play it here in this interview in a second. Matthew McConaughey talking about Lone Star.
For a guy who's made so many great films, and I could ask you about Dallas Buyers Club. You won the Oscar, True Detective. You're a brilliant. But there's a movie of yours I think is underappreciated. And I thought you were fantastic in it. It was pre, you know, McConaughey's stardom with A Time to Kill. And that's the film Lone Star. I love that movie. I love John Sayles' script. I think there's shades of Chinatown with how well it's written. And you're great in that movie. What I know it's been a while now, 95, but what memories do you have of Lone Star? I think that's a brilliant, brilliant movie.
Yeah, Sayles did a wonderful job with that. And he's a great writer. One thing I remember is we were down, I think, around Piedras Negras in a little town just north of the Mexican border in South Texas, I believe. And the next day we had that scene where it's Christopherson and I, and he plays the sheriff, and I'm Buddy Deeds, right?
Yeah.
And Christopherson hadn't, you know, acting was not his day job. Music was his day job. And we were staying in this little, you know, one-star motel in the middle of nowhere that had, you know, one lamp that was lit by batteries, all ground floor levels. And I remember going to him. I was nervous, and you know, as I usually am before going to work. And I remember going over to him, and I said, hey, you want to read through the scene with me? He was like, yeah. And so what we read through it. And then I remember we switched lines. We switched parts. And I read his part, and he read my part, which leads me to more Christopherson stories, which are great, by the way. And I'm going to fit one in here. You ever heard of this book called The Greatest Salesman in the World?
I have, yeah.
It's a book that really helped change my life. And I was reading it at that time. And I was in a little cantina that seats about 5 people, about 5 in the afternoon. I'm having a beer. And I'm reading that book. And in walks Christopherson. And this is actually the day we met. And he goes, hey there, Matthew, what are you reading? And I said, hey, I'm reading this book. It's kind of a self-help, self-improvement book called The Greatest Salesman in the World. And he goes, oh, yeah, what's it? What's it about? And I go, well, like this chapter I'm on right now, it's about, you know, persistence and letting your reach exceed your grasp. And he goes, yeah, it sounds good. Tell me more. And I said, well, like, look at this line here. This one line says, I would rather throw my spear at the moon and hit an eagle than to throw my spear at an eagle and hit a rock. And Christopherson looks at me, then he looks down at the bar in front of him. It's a wooden bar. He starts digging his fingernail into the bar, and he's getting pretty perturbed and ticked off. And after about 10 seconds, he looks at me, and he goes, well, why in the hell would you want to kill an eagle? I said, I don't want to kill an eagle, Chris. It's nothing to do with killing eagles. It's just so it's a phrase of speech if you reach exceeding your grasp. Anyway, that was one of the funniest first moments I ever had with Christopherson.
Oh, that's
And I remind him of that story all the time.
He's good in the movie. The whole cast is brilliant. You should go look it up. You should have friends like John LeBoy who give you criterion so you can watch in your DVD. Lone Star, awesome, awesome movie for Maple Leafs. It's now time for our special guest.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text THIN to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text THIN to 200-300. That's THIN to 200-300. THIN to 200-300.
A pleasure bringing Alexander Philippe. You Can Call Me Bill is a terrific new documentary. Everybody should go check it out. It's all about the life and story of William Shatner. It's opening in several hundred screens on March 22nd, which is William Shatner's 93rd birthday. Alexander, great to see you. Congrats on a really cool accomplishment.
Thank you so much.
So first and foremost, I was born in Toronto, then I grew up in Kingston. So I'm a proud Canadian, and I'm very happy that William Shatner mentions early on that he was born in Montreal. Yes. Tell me how happy he was and how proud he is of his Canadian roots.
Clearly, very much so. You know, I think that I'm just as excited about the film being obviously released in Canada. You know, I wish I'd had the opportunity to go with him to Canada, you know, to screen the film, because I think it would have been an amazing thing. But hopefully the fans will come out.
Absolutely. Does he have any specific remembrances of growing up in Canada, how it informed his life, his career, et cetera?
Well, you know, I don't want to give up too much, because I think a lot of that is actually in the film, you know, and I think there's some very sort of tender, personal sort of moments that he, you know, that he shares about that. I mean, and obviously he talks very fondly about his dad, you know, very much so, and sort of growing up there. So I will leave that for people to discover in the film.
Yeah, the relationship with his dad is very powerful. You know, William Shatner says that he died before he had success, and that clearly impacted him. It felt like for the rest of his life. How could it not?
Yeah, you know, and you have to wonder. You know, it's interesting because yesterday we did a Q&A in New York. We just showed the film at the Lincoln Center, and Neil deGrasse Tyson was there, moderating the Q&A, and somebody asked, actually, somebody from the audience asked him the question, you know, what do you think you would have done if you had not become an actor, you know, and he really, it was interesting because he really sort of struggled with that. You know, I don't think he really had an answer for it, you know, and I sort of wanted to ask, you know, well, would you have followed in your dad's footsteps, you know, because I think he had a lot of admiration for his dad. So, but I don't know. I think that's a bit of a mystery. I mean, this is a guy who's been acting he started when he was
years.
Six. Yeah. No, 87 year acting career. I mean, try to wrap your head around that. It's wild.
You know? No, it is insane. He looks great for 93, by the way. He's figured things out. One of the things is everyone mentions William Shatner is the impression. Everyone does a William Shatner impression, the pregnant pauses. I loved his reaction to it because it doesn't seem like he's thrilled with the famous William Shatner impression.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Like, and I always wonder, and I don't, this is one of those moments where I can't sort of quite get to the bottom of it, because it's like, does he really not get it? Does he really not appreciate it? Or is he just playing somebody who doesn't get it or doesn't appreciate it? You know, right. I think this is where the line between, you know, Bill Shatner, the man, and the actor is sort of blurred. And I think he wants it to be that way, which is really kind of cool.
I love the fact he's a huge Edward G. Robinson fan. He mentioned him and Brando among his favorite actors. I mean, Edward G. Robinson, Little Caesar, that's as good as it gets.
Yeah. And he actually told me this story. It didn't make the cut in the film, but apparently Robinson had a huge art collection, big art collector, including a lot of impressionists. And I my understanding is that Shatner got to actually, you know, see those works and, you know, just see the collection. I mean, that must have been something, you know.
Oh my God. Edward G. Robinson, those gangster movies are so, so powerful.
That's so great.
I love the little bit you have there on when he does Denny Crane, you know, that Pasta Lee. He used to always say his name, how that was became an affectation of the character. He would always say, Denny Crane, Denny Crane, Denny Crane. That was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting, you know, to talk to actors, well, and really to any sort of artist in a way about their techniques. And I love how he sort of personalized this aspect of the script, right, where the character would say Denny Crane, Denny Crane, Denny Crane, and picturing this lizard kind of, you know, flicking its tongue and sort of reading the room in a way and making that a part of the character. And I think that's what's so brilliant about it, you know.
There's a great clip from the AFI, American Film Institute, when George Lucas is being honored. And then Shatner comes out there and starts joking, thinking that this is for Star Trek, not Star Wars.
Yeah.
That must have happened throughout much of his life. I mean, you're known so well for one character. I'm sure people still screwed it up and associated him with Star Wars rather than Star Trek.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, when you think about, because I mean, we're actually showing this clip in the context of how, you know, the danger of comedy, right? And how tricky, you know, the fine line between success and failure in comedy, and the risk of going there in this room full of people to celebrate George Lucas and the legacy of Star Wars, and play this, you know, this guy who is essentially oblivious to the fact, you know, that he is in a room full of Star Wars aficionados. That's a really risky thing to do, and he pulled it off to perfection, obviously.
Yeah, I'm sure his whole life he's been hearing that. But you're right, he was able to have the right comic timing. And you see Lucas laughing, Spielberg laughing as well.
But he took a beat, right? I mean, you're seeing Lucas, like, you're seeing on his face, like, what's, is this a joke? What's, like, you know, like, he's not quite sure, but that's the genius of it, you know?
I thought it was fascinating how much he talked about loneliness. That was a chapter of the movie. What did you find about Shatner and the impact of loneliness on his life?
Oh, very much so. In fact, that chapter really surprised me. What surprised me was how dark it got. You know, it was the second day of interviews, it was the morning, and I don't know, I mean, there was a very different sort of energy about him that day, and well, that morning. It was very different in the afternoon. But the fact that we started to talk about loneliness, and that was obviously the focus of that chapter, I just couldn't pull him out of it. You know, he launched into this very poignant, really dark monologue. And, you know, I sort of really struggled through it because I tried to, you know, take him out of it a little bit, and he wouldn't let me do that. In retrospect, I'm really glad, because I think that chapter is like the heart of darkness, right? It's like going down into the abyss of William Shatner, and you're getting a peek of that, and then we come out on the other side, you know, which is very important. It's like the hero's journey, really, in a way, you know. But I think like I said, I'm very grateful that he took me there, because I think we get to experience I think numerous facets of his person that people are really not familiar with.
Athletes and jocks are an interesting thing there. He mentioned the fact that he was a fan. He was friends with the jocks and the athletes, but really kind of stuck out. He couldn't fit in anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the fact that he was bullied really so much, you know, as a kid, I think is really telling. And and I think it's informed a lot of you know, the way that he had to sort of live his life, you know, as well.
How about the line when he says, wearing black, I've been in mourning my whole life?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he talks about that. He talks about, you know, being in mourning for the earth, as well, you know, after going into space, you know. The You Can Call Me Bill is a film in many ways about death, you know. And I think what I think is so remarkable about Bill is that he's so thoughtful about life and death, and it's a topic that, you know, we should be talking more about, because this is something that's coming for all of us, you know.
That's true. As his expression says, don't take life so seriously. It's not like you're going to get alive.
That's right.
I thought he was thrilled by the fact that Captain Kirk got to go to outer space. I mean, William Shatner in outer space, I mean, that seemed like a transformative experience for him.
Yeah, it really was completely transformative. It was, I mean, you know, just the way he came out and sobbed, basically, you know, realizing that this tiny little planet is all we have, that beyond that is the darkness of space, you know, and the darkness that he associates with death, really. I mean, there is no, in the sense that there is, at least as far as we know, certainly not in our vicinity, you know, there is no life nearby that we know of, you know. And so but really the flip side of that is that we need to take care of our planet. We need to take care of ourselves and each other. And, you know, in this world of constant sort of polarization and vitriol or whatever, like we forget to, you know, to keep our eye on the ball, which is the fact that we're here, which is in itself a miracle. We're here for a very short period of time. And so let's try to all make life, you know, better for each other. It's really not rocket science, you know, no pun intended on that.
Tell me about the way the film was financed. This is fascinating. You needed to raise $75,000, yeah, which you did in 4 days, but this is where fans were giving money. So fans basically had an option with the movie. You could give $100, you have $500, you have $10,000. Tell me about the entire process, because I find that financial model fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, this is a credit to Legion M, you know, and their community. They initially opened that equity financing to their, you know, to their shareholders, to the Legion M community. You know, we had to raise $750,000 to make the film. They opened that to their community for about, you know, the plan was to make it available exclusively to their community for about a week. And then beyond that, to open it to fans worldwide. Well, you know, as you've mentioned, they didn't even have a chance to go that far, because within 4 days, the shares of the film sold out completely, you know. So I mean, you know, now that the film is coming out, the fans, and, you know, some of them invested $100. I think the minimum was $100. Some invest up to $100,000, you know, so they're going to start making their money back, and then plus, you know, I don't know if it's 20% or 30% or whatever before, you know, Bill starts, you know, actually making any money from that, and before we, you know, get into profit. So it is what's called, you know, fan first financing. Yeah.
All right, Alexander, thank you so much. Once again, the film is called William Shatner, You Can Call Me Bill, in theaters March 22nd. I hope everyone checks it out. Thanks so much for the time, and good luck with the movie.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you once again to Alexander. That was fantastic stuff there. Once again, you can check out the William Shatner movie. Lots more good stuff coming down the pike here on Cinephile. In the weeks to come, we're starting to get some good movies, right? Ghostbusters, a new Ghostbusters is coming out soon. Kung Fu Panda 4, I'm going to take my kids to go see. Love Lies Bleeding, good little film noir I'm looking forward to seeing. The new Godzilla vs. Kong. So lots of new movies, lots of new releases. And of course, Chris and I are going to talk Curb Your Enthusiasm as well at some point. Thanks again for supporting Metal Arc. Thanks to Cody and the entire family. Go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe, rate, and review. And I'll see you at the movies.